Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2018 Home Education Conference, held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
I'm Rachel Spigarelli, and this class is Deeper Focus Through Fewer Distractions. So in a lot of ways, this class is a part two to this morning's class about Caroline Webb's How to Have a Good Day, because we'll talk about building your skills to developing a routine that works for you so that you can create space to think more creatively and to engage with your children. So I thought I'd start out by describing a recent morning at my house. We had finished breakfast, and I was trying to put a lasso around my six-year-old and get him started, grab his explode the code while I supervised my four-year-old, clearing the table. And so I'm helping Joseph, and I'm like, okay, Brielle, I keep clearing the table, right? Okay, splendid, right, okay. And then my 10-year-old comes in, and we start on his way things work, which is our two-for-one science-English combo where he does keyword summaries to keep him going. And so I'm like, okay, Daniel, open up. Let's get started. And then I've got Joseph, and we've moved on to the next thing with Joseph, where he's turning the page in his book and keeping going. And then we've got Briella making faces at herself in the mirror, in the microwave, not even paying attention to her job of clearing the table. And I'm like, Briella, keep going, right? So I turn my attention back to Daniel, and we're working on the printing press today, which is kind of complicated, right? And so I'm like, okay, Daniel, write down the title, write down the first few keywords, let's get this started. And then I'm turning back to Joseph, right? Say slipper, slipper. And then I'm calling up to my 8-year-old, and I'm like, hey, remember, it's laundry day. Natalina, come on, bring the laundry. And she comes down. She's pitching complaints the whole way, right? All the way to the laundry room. She's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. She's new to the job, so she's kind of grumpy about it. And I'm still coaching Briella on the, come on, let's go. And then here's Daniel. And I'm like, all right, Daniel, what do you have so far? Okay, sheets first printed on the side, then fed back and printed on the other side. Okay, good. Let's go to the next section. Here's Lena. She's like, are these delicates or not? I can't even tell, right? And I take the time to like give her a really thorough answer so that we're not going to have to do this again. And then I turn back to Daniel. I'm like, okay, you haven't even made progress on your keywords, right? And then here's Joseph. And he's like, in winter, the lake is frozen, right? Okay, right. Good syllables. And then and here's Briella, finally done. And okay, I hate those kind of mornings, right? I hate that feeling of my attention has been fractured all across my family, and none of us feel good about it, right? Distractions are part of the package of homeschooling. We work with children. We work with learning. We expect to take sidetracks, and we expect to get interrupted, but the ability to pay attention is crucial to a good life. Alex Sujong Kim Peng says that the ability to pay attention, to control the content of your consciousness, is critical to good life. When you are constantly interrupted by external things, by self-generated interruptions, or by your own efforts to multitask and juggle several tasks at once, the chronic distractions erode your sense of having control over your life. They don't just derail your train of thought. They make you lose yourself. That feels pretty serious. We do not want fractured attention. We do not want distractions and interruptions like this that make us lose ourselves. So the first thing we're going to talk about is what our ideal is. What is it that we do want? If we don't want a fractured morning like what I described, what are we hoping to gain from our homeschools? So the concept that I most resonate with is called deep work. And there's an author, Cal Newport, who he actually works in DC, and he's a professor and a computer scientist, and is very effective about talking about what deep work is. He starts out by defining deep work with its antonym approach. So what's shallow work, first of all, right? What would you guys say is something shallow, a task that's shallow that you have to do? Laundry is a shallow task. It's non-cognitively demanding. Does not take your entire brain once you've got the hang of which ones are delicates, right? Okay, what's another non-cognitively demanding task? Dishes. Oh, we could do those in our sleep, right? We get to do these things that feel pretty automatic. We're not really needing to use our whole brain, right? So they're often things that could be automated or done by a machine, And really, it kind of comes down to answering basic emails could even fall in this, right? They're not really taking your whole brain or your whole self. Whereas deep work, now deep work takes all of you, right? It's creative, it's innovative. You feel like you are working deeply and really accessing the best of your ability. Really, another way of talking about deep work is talking about flow. Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi said that flow is concentration so intense that there is no attention left over to think about anything irrelevant or to worry about problems. I have experienced flow and I love it. I love how I feel when I am in the zone and I'm loving it and I'm engaged with the task. It feels like my whole brain is working and I feel creative and I feel like I'm giving. Have any of you felt that? And you have that feeling of flow and you know how good it feels. Now, does it happen very often and are you able to maintain a state of flow? We are homeschooling parents with a lot of demands on our time. So it's not something that we can necessarily feel all the time. In this talk, I don't talk. My whole topic is not flow and deep work, but I recommend to you from the LDSHE library, this talk by Dr. Ariel Rodriguez in LDSHE 2014 on flow from Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. And his excellent book, and I recommend that book to you. It's like a conversation. And you, every time I listen to Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, I feel energized about my ability to feel flow and my ability to concentrate and why it's so important. So our goal is this feeling of unbroken concentration. That's the end result. That's the goal that we want to achieve. Because to learn requires intense concentration. And we are learning. We are learning to be homeschool parents, and we need to be creative for that task. And our children are learning as well. So in this class, we're going to talk about what we can do to create those environments where we can feel flow and where we can feel deep work. David Brooks is a New York Times columnist, and his quote is there in your handout. He said, "How many talks have we been to on distraction? How many times have people told us, put your phone away, stop checking your email right before bed?" Am I telling you anything news-breaking, right? No. Like, you guys have heard this advice before, right? I might as well just be telling you, eat your vegetables. Eat your vegetables. Eat your vegetables. Eat more vegetables. David Brooks says, if you want to win the war for attention, don't try to say no to the trivial distractions you find on the information smorgasbord. Try to say yes to the subject that arouses a terrifying longing, and let the terrifying longing crowd out everything else. What good advice. How many times have we thought, oh, no, 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 or when a child is trying to concentrate on something, it doesn't matter if the table is completely cleared, they will stare at the curtains on the wall and find them more interesting than the subject material in front of them, unless that subject material arouses a terrifying longing, unless they are so engaged and so interested. So step one for both us and our students is to find that subject that arouses a terrifying longing. I encourage you to turn to your children and say, what do you really long to study? And start there when you're working to eliminate their distractions. And with yourself, what is it that you most want to be spending your time for? Time on. That's where you should begin. So in this class, we're going to talk about three different kinds of distractions, three main categories of distractions. We're going to talk first about internal distractions, the distractions that happen within our own head. Then we're going to talk about distractions in our physical environment. And last, we're going to talk about distractions online and dealing with the technology component. Internal distractions are not unique to homeschoolers, nor are they unique to this time in the world. People have gotten distracted and daydreamed and been lost in their thoughts forever. That's always part of being human. We know how it feels, though, to feel that chronic sense of that erosion of ourself when we have too many tasks and when we're asked to do too many things, like I described with my morning with my children. The biggest antidote to our distractions internally is single tasking. That means that we're not trying to do more than one thing at once. And I know I'm a homeschooler and mom too. Right now you guys are thinking, does she even have any idea of how many things I have to get done? How could I ever do one thing at a time? The thing is, when we work on one item at a time, we feel satisfaction, with that instead of feeling our attention divided. Because you know how it feels, even if you're giving a piece of yourself to each one of the people at the table, you don't feel the same as when you give focus to one thing at a time. So can I have a volunteer who knows the first seven letters of the alphabet? Thank you so much. Okay, could you tell us the first seven letters of the alphabet? Great, and the first seven numbers.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
You're so fast. Now can you tell me a letter of the alphabet and a number in the same seven?
A1, B2, C3, D4, E5, F6, G7.
Seven, good, all right. So you were like about a fourth as fast as you were the first time, right? That's an example. Thank you for being willing to be put on the spot. The example of the interleafing with the tasks that we all fall trapped to, right? We all think it'll probably be faster if I do both of them at once rather than doing one at a time. The importance of single tasking cannot be overstated. Caroline Webb, in her book, How to Have a Good Day, she says, research unequivocally shows that multitasking damages our productivity, which means, to put it bluntly, it lengthens our days. Because when our productivity is damaged, it's going to take longer to get everything done, just like saying the first seven letters of the alphabet and the first seven numbers. She says, goes on to explain, trying to do more than one thing at once not only slows us down, but causes us to make more mistakes, with the resulting rework slowing us down even more. We feel busier, but we're doing less, and we're doing it less well. I felt this way. I know that I fall prey to this, but my best mornings are the ones when I'm wholeheartedly absorbed on one task at a time. When instead of trying to lasso my six-year-old and keep him next to me and review his phonics at the kitchen table while I'm supervising his sister doing the laundry and his sister clearing the table and his brother doing the printing press, if I take him into a room alone and I look at him in the eyes and I watch him form each letter in cursive and I don't try and get something else done while he's doing it, I feel good and I feel engaged with him and he feels satisfied with the attention he has from me. It's so tempting to feel like, oh, he'll do one thing, I'll do one thing. But inevitably, my one thing doesn't pace with his one thing. And then I'm distracted, and neither of us feel good about the time we spent. He's waiting for me. I'm waiting for him. But it's different when I go intentionally and say, these next 15 minutes are for you, Joseph. And that's all I'm doing. And we're in a quiet place. Actually, Joseph, he just started reading the Book of Mormon for the first time. And I'll tell you what, every time I've done that with my kids and I hear a child sound out each one of those words at a time, and it's an agonizing 30 minutes sometimes to read through a column of verses. But how I feel when I have given him that attention and there is no interruption, I love that feeling, you know? And just the other day when we were doing it and he started off with his prayer, before he began that, he said, Heavenly Father, thank you for the progress I've made in my reading. Help me today to progress some more. And I thought, that's what I want. I don't want those mornings where I'm trying to force feed, lasso, momentum, be the motivator for all my people. No, I want to do one thing at a time and do that one thing. And if Joseph is the only one who gets his schoolwork done, I'm okay with that. Because I like how it feels to focus like that. And I'm sure you guys do too. Clifford Nass is a communications professor at Stanford, and is a prolific writer. I think he already has 300 publications. He has a lot to say about our communication styles, and that's really one of his specialties. He says, and this is in your handout, people who multitask all the time can't filter out irrelevancy. They can't manage a working memory. They're chronically distracted. They initiate much larger parts of their brain that are irrelevant to the task at hand. They're pretty much mental wrecks. I have felt like a mental wreck. I don't like how that feels. We want to be able to filter out irrelevancy. And if you were in my talk this morning about the difference between system one, our automatic system, and system two, our deliberate system, this quote will make even more sense to you, because we want to be able to have filters in our brain that help us work at our best. We don't want to have to take any interruption that comes along. We want to be able to prioritize and keep our deliberate system engaged so that we're making progress on our goals that are most important. Caroline Webb says, genuine insight isn't helped by piecemeal attention. It's like a tomato, right? Cutting it up and dicing it up, it is not the same thing as a tomato that's whole. when you cut that up and put it into all those little pieces, it serves a much different purpose. So the most important thing you can start doing once you've committed to single tasking is to batch your tasks and zone your day. You need to be considering only one thing at a time. I explained this morning that Caroline Webb's book, How to Have a Good Day, is intended for business professionals. But I feel like this really applies to homeschoolers as well. And I find success with this. I actually do. There are so many ways to succeed in homeschooling. But the one way that I find success with batching my tasks is that we do the math all at once, individually. And so I'm doing math for about an hour and a half, but it's like, you know, a longer periods of time with older kids. But it's I rotate to which child I'm doing it with, but it's all math all at once in a row. That kind of thing where you're engaged, you're already thinking in that mindset and you're not having to jump between subjects. Now, certainly there are other ways of batching your tasks, because when you're homeschooling, sometimes just batching with one kid is enough of a batched task. And you're able to just focus on that one kid and where they're learning. But this is what you need to do, not doing the piecemeal attention, the frantic, the crisis resolution. It's being able to group things together. So part of the problem is that once we scatter our attention, it increases the load on our brain, and it makes it a lot harder to think creatively. Our deliberate system, our system two, can only handle a few pieces of information at once. So we need to keep that batched. We need to single task focus. So let's talk about which tasks you guys can think of that require the most creativity in your day. When are the times when you feel the most creative?
9 o'clock
at night, and what's happening for you at 9 o'clock at night?
I'm supposed to be getting ready for bed.
So you're getting ready for bed, and through your head, you're finding enormous brainstorms, daydreams of the future, ideas for the next book you want to write, all of those things. All right, yes?
Cooking.
Me too. I find that when I'm like, oh, what ingredients? Oh, and look at, oh, and oh my goodness, look at what this beautiful thing is that I created. I love that feeling too. Sometimes it doesn't feel as creative, but the times when it does, I like that. Yeah. Anyone else feel creative during the day? All right. Yeah, that is a problem. Let's figure out the things, the tasks. Yeah. When are the tasks that don't require creativity? What are, name some of the tasks you're doing every day that aren't creative. Okay, so sometimes it's creative, but sometimes mealtime is just, it's going through a machine. It's like, do you want beans with that? Here we go. Like, lunch lady. Yeah.
Driving
does not feel creative. Folding laundry does not feel creative. Jinx, huh? Okay, yes.
Getting ready for the day.
Okay, yeah. That doesn't feel creative, just a task to do. Does anyone grade worksheets? I don't know what kind of homeschoolers you are, but... You know, some homeschoolers grade worksheets. That doesn't necessarily feel that way. How about responding to emails? Does that feel super creative? How about teaching a lesson or preparing a lesson? Maybe you're teaching for church. Do you sometimes feel creative with that kind of task? Sometimes, maybe. So when you start thinking through the task list that you have for the day, how about like putting things in their places, just the administrative tasks? Filing this way, putting that up, how much creativity is that taking you? Probably not much, right? So we need to be thinking about our tasks and asking ourselves, when do I want to be creative? And what do I need to do to make this feel more creative? And how can I harness that creation power I have within me? Because it feels different when we're making dinner and we are creative. I feel different when I present that dinner to my kids than when I'm like, yes, it's quesadillas again. All right, it works, right? Okay. So when we talk about being productive or busy, we know that our goal is not to be busy. That isn't what we actually want out of our life. And I mean, what vegetable besides green beans? Okay, Brussels sprouts sometimes feel like busy work. But anyway, okay. We want to be productive, and our productivity comes from deep stretches of deep work. So the more often we can hit that moment of flow, and the more often our kids can hit that moment of flow, that's what we want. That's our goal, and we need clear indicators of what it means to be productive. What would you tell your 11-year-old about what it is to be productive? What would you tell him to say, This is how you know you've had a productive morning. Did you recognize that feeling? When we were both working on that together and we figured out the printing press and no one interrupted us, that feels good. That's called flow. We need to be able to educate our children and educate ourselves, because productivity is mindful, in my opinion. It's being present. It's being engaged. I feel like I'm busy when I'm checking off a worksheet, but I'm productive when I'm able to explain, you know, double-digit subtraction without losing my temper and without minding that I have to do it 5 or 6 times to the same child in like a 5-minute period. So one of the most important things is that we need deliberate downtime in order for our brains to function well. I know, I wonder if I'm sounding like a broken record. Vegetables, vegetables, vegetables. Fill your life with vegetables, right? Deliberate downtime is part of those vegetables that you need in your life. You need this kind of self-care, because your brain cannot be creative unless you are feeding your brain with the things that it needs. And downtime is one of the things that it needs. So in order to do mindful downtime, not just accept the next TV show or the video or clicking through Facebook or working on the computer, we need to be really thoughtful and say, I get 15 minutes right now to myself. And what is the thing that will energize me the most? What is the best boost I could give myself in 15 minutes? How will I learn to feel better? Caroline Webb suggests in her book that one of the best ways we can do this deliberate downtime is using it to reflect. And she suggests the acronym DATE: discovered, achieved, thankful, and experienced. What did you discover today? What did you achieve today? What are you thankful for today? And what were the things that you experienced? I like how that helps my journaling, and I feel like it's really, it prompts me to write down things that maybe I wouldn't have done otherwise. So I think one of the biggest things we face as homeschooling parents is overcoming overload. And like in the talk this morning from Allie, when she was talking about how many people are doing the mental math about our homeschooling, and saying, hey, homeschooling mom, it's not going to add up, and you are not going to be able to do it. And there are times when we're up in the night going, I actually cannot do this. Like, we start to feel overloaded. So what are the things that contribute to our overload? What are the things that make you feel most overloaded? Just the sheer number of tasks? The sheer number of subjects? And it's not just today. It's like, for how many years in the future, right? That's how I feel sometimes. I think, yes. Knowing enough to meet our child's needs, researching enough to be able to do it. What else makes you feel overloaded?
Fulfilling expectations, both mine and external.
Oh, those expectations, the external, the ones from dad and grandma and grandpa and the school district, and your own expectations of what success is.
I was going to say expectations.
Good. Jinx.
Can I just say the distractions in my life are what, like, when I am not distracted, I feel pretty good about everything else that's, you know, could be overwhelming.
Yeah, so the distractions put you up there. Me too. When my resilience is low, I just, any little thing, and it's shiny, and I'm over there, and I'm not feeling flow, and I don't feel that goodness. Were you going to say one?
Having to manage myself and other people at all times.
Oh my goodness, having to manage all these people in your house. When I was at girls' camp last summer, and I was helping in the kitchen, which, right, I mean, this woman, 225 young women she's cooking for, no fridge, no electricity, right? And I'm watching her, and I was like, you know what the best thing is? Is all she's doing is managing. She's not, like, frying the eggs and calling over her shoulder, come on, let's go, guys, right? Like, all she did was manage, and I thought, how much better would it be at my own house if I would, like, not try and be both? Because I feel like that's when it really wears me down too. Was there another hand?
I think problems outside of my home, like outside the walls, either through church calling or neighbor or friend, those things, even when I feel like I've got a stable home environment, we're going and then all this.
Yeah, all the extra stuff that can go on with extended family or neighbors.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, jinx. So my 5-year-old loves to jinx everyone. In fact, like, when she watches, like, conference, she'll, like, say, amen, jinx, at the same time as the speaker. We've actually outlawed jinx, so I'm only saying it here because I cannot say it at home anymore.
For type A personalities, micromanaging.
So micromanaging, again, trying to deal with that. Yeah, definitely. So one of the things that we need to do is start automating some of our daily tasks, especially the ones that don't bring us joy, creative joy. we need to start, if it's getting dressed in the morning, it's a uniform, right? You're going to be Steve Jobs in your black turtleneck, and you're going to look good, and that's what you're going to do every day. And lunches, so what if it's quesadillas for 365 days of the year? You've got it, and you've got a system. And you're going to lower the number of decisions that you have to do. Because decisions alone, it's good to have a choice, but if there are too many choices, you really start to fade, and you really start to become overloaded. So you need to start coming up with simple response rules. We don't answer the phone during school time. We never schedule appointments before 12 noon. We always leave our Thursdays open. We go hiking every Wednesday. You need to have some simple response rules to guide yourself with some of these decisions so that you're not overwhelmed from the input outside the house or what's going on at home. Or you need to, have just more patterns for how you're doing it. We always stretch while we're listening to our Breathe Aloud. Or we always do physical activity, just before lunch. Caroline Webb teaches that the more decisions we're asked to make, the less cognitive capacity we have available to assess alternatives and make good, nuanced choices. So the more and more often we're asked to choose, it's like that cognitive capacity starts to decrease. And that's a very real thing for both us and our children. I just finished this book last week from Ed Calliwell. And the book is called Crazy Busy. And he says the biggest problem with being overwhelmed is not that you're going to have so many tasks you won't get it done. But the biggest problem with being overwhelmed is that you will fail to think at your best. It doesn't matter whether or not you get those things done. Think back to the morning I described to you. I actually got all our academics done. But I felt horrible and so did my kids. So when you are thinking about what you want to schedule for your day, you need to be thinking at your best. You need system two engaged and being able to really take care of yourself in that healthy way. So when you think about your day, all of us have tasks, so many tasks, more tasks than we can get done. So which one of those tasks fall into the category of something only you can do? There are other tasks that someone else could do moderately well in your house. So like these beautiful carrots, like I have never cooked a dish like that in my house because most of the time we have little people helping with our carrots, right? What are the tasks that someone else could do moderately well? And I feel really good about the times when I get my kids engaged with chores that maybe haven't helped me feel creative and are simpler tasks. What about you guys? What are you doing to engage the people around you in these small tasks that so you have your creativity and your energy for the things you can do alone?
We all have different chores. So laundry and dishes are now, everybody is responsible for their clothes and they're
good.
Responsible for.
All right.
Because those are very automated.
Yeah, okay, so each person on their own laundry, own dishes, yes.
My son likes hot meals for breakfast.
Hot meals for breakfast.
So he learned to cook.
Nice, he's on breakfast. You got it, yes.
I actually have a question about that.
Yes. Right, right. Have you guys read All of a Kind Family?
Yes.
Next book, next read aloud for your family. I love it. It's like, what is it, 1910? And she's like, this is the way I get them to dust. I hide a button in the room, and the first one to find the button shows that they've done the dusting well enough. I'm joking. That's not actually how you do it. That was. I think that's a great comment. What do you guys think? What are the things you've done to engage the people around you in the tasks you're delegating them to?
We do things in zones, so it keeps it very simple.
Zones. Tell me more about zones.
So someone has a family room, someone has
okay.
a kitchen.
Okay, each having a room.
And we switch every week so everyone gets their turn.
Okay,
but
rotation.
They're responsible for that entire zone.
Nice, that whole room. So even if someone else has come in and dumped their backpack, they get to clean it up because they're on that room and they rotate. Nice, very good. Yes?
We do the zone system also, and it's even more effective when we play music.
Yes.
Effective yeah. zones with music, yes.
Yeah. So we play music too, but then I have kids that are very particular about certain. So my daughter has the kitchen because she loves being in the kitchen. I have a son who actually does the bathroom because he's particular about the bathroom.
Okay, good. So they've had some choice. So some choice is good with that?
I assign them. But
oh, you assigned it? You already knew what they liked. Good.
My children have capsule wardrobes.
Great, capsule wardrobes. So fewer wardrobe choices, all matching. Good.
Did you get enough answers
yet? No, go ahead. Yeah.
Whatever chores need to be done in each room, like the kitchen has
Oh, wow.
And it makes it fun because kids are like running like, I'm going to the toilet. No, like,
wow, that's so creative. So a hidden list, a hidden sign-up chart. Yeah. Wow, cool. Hide and seek in one. Yeah.
This might be taking a step back from what we're talking about with delegating, but my first attempts to delegate to my children kind of fell flat. And what I discovered, particularly with my second son, is that he needed more training. He needed
more training. Absolutely.
More side-by-side me there helping him.
Absolutely, yes.
Before he felt comfortable doing it on his own.
So absolutely.
For a short time, I had, we would do it together. If I told him to go do it, I'd get all sorts of pushback. But when I just stepped in and helped him, all of a sudden it was wonderful. It was great. And eventually he
beautiful. Yes, absolutely. So taking the time to train properly. And we've all felt that, right? How good does it feel when someone comes in, just starts helping us fold instead of saying like, oh my word, why isn't this done yet, right? But being able to be engaged with our kids for a period of time, our load will increase as we train and delegate these responsibilities, but it lightens the load in the end. And you uniquely can only do some of the things to lead your homeschool and your family. There are things only you can do. And doing dishes is not one of those things. And doing laundry is not one of those things. There are so many things that are unique to you. You need to take delegating very seriously.
As far as the joy goes, with my children, we have a certain amount of time. My husband and I go walking in the morning, and we walk for 45 minutes.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yes.
My children are old enough to leave them during that
yes.
time in our neighborhood, but they can get a certain amount of, like, TV time that it goes off as soon as we're home, but they can't have that time until their zones are done.
Great. Okay.
And so it's self-governed and they know that they have this reward at the end, and the faster and the more efficient they get done, the more time that they have for their own enjoyment.
Yeah, beautiful. So the time limit exists.
Home, it's off and we begin.
The speedier it is, then the reward comes, and the reward can be longer depending on the speed. That's a great way. I like that. You know, Caroline Webb says, we so often get pulled into tasks that we should, by rights, be asking others to help with. By being unwilling to delegate tasks that others could reasonably help with, we fail to make progress on the important or tricky things only we can do. But when you feel overloaded, and I admit it's hard sometimes at LDSHE to not start thinking, oh, that's a good idea, but you're not home to implement it. Here's what you're going to do. Smallest step. What is my smallest step? Anytime you start to feel overloaded, what is the smallest step I can take to start moving things forward? And your unique small step, right? The thing you personally can do as the leader and parent of your home. So then let's talk about external distractions, the distractions in our environment, right? This is the name of this cauliflower. Yes, that's right. And it's like super, it's like nuttier and more like a fractal, right? The external is a little bit different, but it's still the regular cauliflower, right? So when we start thinking about our physical environment and setting it up for success in our homeschool, we need to consider what we can do to create a force field around focus. We want to put our children and ourselves in an environment where we can focus, where concentration is going to be able to be really easy to access. What are the things you've done so far to help create that force field around focus and that feeling of concentration in the physical environment? Yes?
Get rid of clutter.
Beautiful.
I turned off the notifications for text message, email, Facebook, so where I don't see it until I pick up my phone later.
High five. Nice job. No notifications. Yes.
Sometimes people can be influenced by color of the room.
Color of the room. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the colors around you. Yes, Louisa?
Have a space that is set up for what you're going to do, and it has everything you need.
Right there.
Everything that you don't need.
Right, everything that you need, nothing you don't need. You need Post-it notes, you need pencils, you've got it, but the calculator's not there if it's not part of that lesson.
Playing gospel music while doing schoolwork.
Great, so gospel music. I like how you use the music. That's great. Okay, so the music is part of it, setting up that environment. So it's not like it's a all, you know, one size fits all solution. We know that. And we know it's different for kid to kid and subject to subject, right? But we also know how it feels. I personally struggle when I'm at the kitchen table with my kids because there's like the whole kitchen. And if I just walk over and grab some almonds while they're working or whatever, it's distracting for me and it's distracting for them. And being able to find spaces where we're able to focus on one of the most important things as we move into the online distractions, but in our physical environment, is to have your phone farther away. It's not like the first time that you've heard that advice, but what a difference it makes to not have your phone there and part of it. So when we start thinking about our online distractions, we know how it feels when we're like, oh, we're looking at one thing, and then we're looking at one thing, and how did it get to be 9 o'clock? Oh, my word, like, where did my hour just go, right? We've felt that, and it's not unique to homeschoolers to struggle sometimes with that distraction. So the author of Deep Work, Cal Newport, he says that we actually should schedule our online time. Okay, totally radical idea, right? But he says, like, you actually take, like, a little card or a little notebook, and you're going to write down everything you're going to do. So, like, let's say you let yourself go online, like, every 15 minutes, maybe you have to go online that frequently. Like, maybe you have, like, some really urgent stuff. But it's not like you're constantly online. Like, you're on, and then you're off. Because that's one of the most important tips, is going online in bursts. Not spending this, like, whole big time online. And there's a lot of apps that can actually help you with this and help you guard and keep yourself accountable and your children, where you say, you know what, you're going to be writing that paper for an hour, but, you know, the internet is part of that experience on the computer, so it's kind of hard. Oh, I do need to look up, what was that date? No, you write it down, and you commit to yourself when you will go online, and you don't go online before then. I don't know anyone else but Cal Newport that's given that kind of advice, and I know that sounds kind of radical and a bit demanding. But one of the other authors that talks a lot about distraction is Alex Sujong Kempeng. He wrote a book called The Distraction Addiction, and he talks about conscious computing. These are principles that he feels like will be the things that can help you the most with your experience online. So to be human, to be calm, to be mindful, to make conscious choices, to extend your abilities, to seek flow. I don't have very many flow experiences online, personally. That's not where I get my flow. I think you'd really have to be working hard to feel that. You'd have to be really engaged with the material that grabbed you, right? And, like, that mattered a lot to you. Not, like, clicking on every link that, oh, and then, oh, I wonder what, right? Because sometimes that happens. Then to use technologies in ways that engage you with the world and use technology in ways that are restorative. How about you? Are you finding restorative uses of technology? What do you do to restore yourself with technology?
Family history work is actually
family history work. Thank you. Yeah. That's a great example. Yes?
Meditation.
So tell me how you're doing that online. Are you listening to a recording?
I have the
affirmations?
Headspace app.
Okay, the Headspace app. Awesome. Great. Thank you. Anyone else find restorative use of technology? Yes?
Nature scenes on the TV.
Okay, nature scenes. Great. Thanks, Louisa. Okay, books, yes.
We use the church website a lot. The LDS.org has some great videos, movies, also through the seminary system.
Great, so LDS.org and seminary. Great, good, yes.
We use Marco Polo, which is a...
The Marco Polo, yes. Family connections, good, yes.
We use our Amazon Echo for math facts reviews.
Oh, how fun, math facts reviews with Amazon Echo, great. Was there another hand over here? Great, I'm so proud of you, good job. I think it's really exciting when we feel like we can use that technology to harness it and to be able to engage with it in a way that makes a difference for us. So Adam Alter wrote a book called Irresistible, and it's about our use with technology, our engagement with technology. And he says that for parents, there's four things you need to be. You need to be approachable, calm, informed, and realistic. We're talking about your children's interactions online and how you're going to respond to them. You're going to be approachable. That means you will want to hear their feedback. You want to be able to hear what they say. They know that if they come to you, you're welcoming, you're amiable, and you're willing to talk. You're not going to overreact because you know that will make the problem worse. And you already have confidence in that relationship. So that's part of being approachable. There's already a good relationship before there's an online problem. Then to be informed, you need to understand and have done your own research about the social networking sites they're doing or other websites that they're using. Because if you're saying, well, what did your friends do or what did their parents say, that's not going to get you to where you want to be. Adam Alter has some really interesting stories in his book about families and their interactions about the media that I feel like are pretty eye-opening to understand how when we aren't informed, things can go really south. But then also to be realistic, there's a lot our children are going to stumble across even with our best efforts at prevention. And being able to proactively defend and protect and being able to respond to it in a way that will not cause further harm. Adam Alter talks about being behavioral architects. And what that means is creating an environment where our best behavior can come out. So we are going to blunt temptation because temptation is never going to go away. The temptation is part of having, part of living now. He suggests things like having family offline time where it's something to look forward to, something compelling and pleasant. Adam Alter says, a combination of abstinence and willpower simply won't work. You need to know what you can do to blunt those temptations. So you can't stop using your phone altogether, perhaps, but you can aim to use it less often. You can't avoid checking email, but life should be compartmentalized, so refreshing your email account isn't always an option. And actually, that's our next topic, is being good at email. Caroline Webb has an entire appendix in her How to Have a Good Day about dealing with email. It's awesome. And I just have to say, if you haven't switched over to inbox yet, do that today. Watch one of these tutorials. It makes such a difference to the simplicity and streamline of your work online. Inbox allows you to snooze emails and have them come up in a month. It can have you post reminders that you need to email someone else. It actually can remind you, you sent this email 3 days ago and you haven't heard back yet. Would you like to reply and remind the person that you've waited? Inbox will sort things by highest priority based on whether it was written by a person or by MailChimp. It can allow you to still sort your forums, your promotional items. Using all those filters, you need to be using filters. If you aren't using filters right now, you should go and watch a tutorial on using filters. I allow only emails from people to come into my inbox where I'm seeing those. I actually have it set up, and you could do your own thing, but the way I do my shopping, I have everything that's a coupon sent to the trash where it's automatically deleted after 30 days. And then if I want to go shopping, I search it in the trash. But then I never have to see it in my face and I never have to worry about it. And I don't end up impulsively buying something because it's on sale. Because that's how my life is right now. So the thing with email is that turning off notifications is absolutely hands down one of the best things we can do. You need to choose to look at your email stream when you are ready to look at your email stream. My guess is that none of us have such high priority demands that we need to receive the email as soon as it comes. Now, maybe you do have such demands that you need to respond within an hour. So check once an hour. Maybe you need to respond twice a day. So check that often. But don't allow every email to ding you and to interrupt your flow. So Cal Newport says, even a quick glance at something like an email inbox leaves a cognitive residue, which could actually create a significant cognitive impairment for quite a long time to follow. So really, the worst thing you can do if you're trying to use your mind at its maximum limit would be what almost everyone does, which is let me just take a quick glance at the phone and see what has been emailed to me. And that's like working with a significant cognitive handicap. There's actually something called email apnea, where people pick up their phone and literally hold their breath because they're worried that something might have come in and they're checking really quickly. You need to turn that on when you're ready for it. And if you do have really high priority emails you're waiting for, use inbox to sort through those as well. You can set it up so only certain people come in. Yes?
What if you're around somebody that constantly, another adult that constantly has to check, they have high priority email stuff?
So other adults that are engaged in their phone, what would you guys say? What has helped you the most with other adults when you're not making choices for yourself?
I mean, my husband has an Apple Watch and his phone, and he works from home. He's getting messages, bishop break messages all the time. And I've had to learn to just let that be his thing. That's his journey, it's not mine.
Okay, so just letting it go, allowing it to be their thing. So not trying to control or worry too much?
So along those same lines, turning off for from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. and engaging with the family, which would do him a world of good.
Right. Okay. So really wanting to get someone else, your husband, to engage with the family. So we definitely want to do that. So I would say, first of all, this class about distraction is for us because we know that sometimes we're distracted. And you know what? It's contagious. The more we are undistracted and the more we are enjoying that lifestyle, the more we can engage our family with it. And our children will follow our example, and so will our husbands. And we'll be able to feel more confident. At the end of my talk, I list several books that have made a difference for me in convincing me about my policies, about my own distractions, and I think that those will help your family members as well. But it's not always a quick fix, because it's really, it's like that dopamine hit. Every time you get it, it feels important, it feels good, and you start seeking that out, right? And you know, the studies that they've done with rats where it's like they always got a pellet when they pushed the bar was different than if they sometimes got a pellet when they pushed the bar. If they could push the bar and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't, they would push the bar like crazy, because they never knew what would come up. And it's like that with our phones. It's like this lottery. We don't know. Are we going to get something good? Or are we going to get something hurtful? And so we check and we check. And our brain gets used to that kind of distraction and that hit with our neurochemicals. And it's not healthy for us. And it's good to take time. So the more time that you can structure. So most importantly, batch process your email. Do it. And the ones that take the most creativity, I like to keep in touch with some friends that are far away. That takes more creativity for me. Then there's others that's just like sorting through and really quickly marking those as done, archiving those. But we need to be batch processing our email. I also have an extensive list in the handout from Caroline Webb about how to be good at email. But we won't be able to go all of that over all of that, except just to say email is not for sensitive interactions. It's intended for a purpose, and it's difficult to convey tone and to go for face-to-face, right? And to just, I think the best advice about email is to only handle it once. You read it once, you take care of it right then. And if you are reading it and not having time to take care of it, don't be reading your email right then. Like, don't pick up your phone and read it, right? Like, I look at it and sometimes I'm like, oh, I have 5 minutes. But it's like, you know what? I didn't have 5 minutes to read that and now think about it and like not, and then you have to go back to it, because it takes the same cognitive ramp up to get back to where you were with your thought process. Okay, so what we're going to move on to is, I actually just finished this book yesterday, Peter Shankman, Faster Than Normal. Peter Shankman has ADD, and his podcast and his book, they are so engaging. I don't have ADD, but I really recommend his book. He talks about what he's done to make himself productive. And one of the things he says is, if you want something you've never had, you need to do something you've never done. And right now what we want is we want experiences of flow and experiences of deep work. And so what do we need to do to decrease those distractions in our home? You're going to walk away with this and think, okay, I would like to feel fewer distractions. I would like fewer interruptions. But then you're going to turn to your family and think, will my family be on board, right? So I felt like what would be helpful is if we do some examples of high technology boundary communities so that you can say, you know what I'm asking for is that we have 2 hours every night where our family is offline. Or what I'm asking for is that you only go online 3 times a day and that you have a written out plan of what you're going to do when you're online. You're reporting to me about what you're doing and then you're coming off. Now, that would work for some kids, right? Maybe some kids are more autonomous and don't need that. But when you think about these intentional online policies that you want for your family and your child says to you, oh my word, you are the only mother in the world that is asking this. First of all, you can contact me by email and I will batch process that email and get back to you. But you can also consider the other communities. There's 2 communities that, actually there's 3. The Jewish community is very careful with their technology boundaries as well. They actually have a policy that none of their community should be using their phones on the Sabbath, on their Sabbath, on Shabbat. And so another community is the Waldorf community. So in a 2012 Washington Post article about the Waldorf community, the author interviewed Flint Hill in Oakton, Virginia, which is very near my home, which is one of the most highly technology-connected schools in the nation right now. They have a tremendous amount of technology. And then there's a Waldorf school downtown in D.C., and they were talking about the difference between those 2 mindsets. The one at Flint Hill said, tech is like oxygen. It's all around us. Why wouldn't we get our children started early? And the Waldorf school said, the educators here, the author of the article says, educators here fear that the immediate gratification of texts and Wikipedia threatens face-to-face communications and original thinking. So they ban cell phones, laptops, and tablets and require students to handwrite papers until high school. What is the rush? There is a time and a place for technology, but children need first to relate to the physical world around them. Waldorf education is very different. Computer technology is shunned. Parents are advised not to permit television watching at home. In fact, children cannot watch any television until they are 12. And at that time, it is only documentaries vetted by their parents. They cannot watch any films until they are 14, and they don't use the internet until they are 16. This may sound draconian, but taking a more considered approach to the use of technology in class allows teachers to help students develop core skills such as effective executive decision-making, creativity, and concentration. Because teaching, he said, is about human contact and interaction. I don't think we are doing children any favors by teaching them through machines at that young age. Waldorf schools believe that students are ready to engage with electronic media only after they have spent several years learning and living in the world of three dimensions and develop mastery over their bodies and their wills. By seeing technology as a tool, they learn to master it and use it appropriately, to develop a relationship to it as they would with any other tool. Now, another well-known community that shuns technology is the Amish community. They're asking themselves, is this going to bolster our life together as a community? And we can ask that same question in our families. But it's not just these communities that are talking about it. Let's look at some of the LDS quotes. Elder Christofferson had a December 2017 BYU devotional where he said, there may be a lot of noise in your life, more or less constant engagement online without downtime, without time to be quiet and reflect and think, without time to look inside and discern where you are and where you should be going. You may be influenced by unrealistic expectations, such as perfection should be immediate, or uninterrupted happiness and success should be the norm in life. I hope you will lay aside these misconceptions and dial down the noise. President Uchtdorf, in July 2015 Ensign, he said, is one of the great ironies of our age that we are blessed with so much, and yet we can be so unhappy. The wonders of prosperity and technology overwhelm us and shower us with security, entertainment, instant gratification, and convenience. Yet all around us, we see so much unhappiness. In the frequently quoted 2017 BYU Women's Conference, Elder Stevenson said, we should all be very aware of the time that can be consumed on social media or in the use of mobile apps. I offer two additional merging risks, which net is cast over virtually everyone: idealized reality and debilitating comparisons. So we have Elder Christofferson saying that we start to imagine perfection should be immediate, that we imagine we have uninterrupted happiness. We have Elder Stevenson talking about the idealized reality, the debilitating comparisons. In our most recent general conference, we have Elder Ballard saying too many allow themselves to almost live online with their smart devices, screens illuminating their faces day and night, earbuds in their ears, blocking out the still small voice of the spirit. And Elder Oaks said, also in this conference, we are surrounded by media influences and cultural deteriorations that will carry us downstream in our values if we are not continually resisting. To move upstream toward our eternal goal, we must constantly keep paddling. So, as you consider your own patterns in your home, you might feel like there are some ways to change. And I know I'm still working on changing a lot of things about our distraction. So in section 6 of the Doctrine and Covenants, verse 33 says, fear not to do good, my sons, for whatsoever ye sow, that shall ye also reap. Therefore, if ye sow good, ye shall also reap good for your reward. And then a few verses later, we're taught, behold, I do not condemn you. Go your way and sin no more. Perform with soberness the work which I have commanded you. And then we all probably know how verse 36 is. Look unto me in every thought. Doubt not, fear not. So here we are thinking about things we don't need to fear, but we do need to perform our work with soberness and consider what we need to do. So I want to review the book list that I would suggest if you or members of your family would like to learn more about distraction and some of the things that are going on. Cal Newport has written two books, So Good They Can't Ignore You and Deep Work. I really like Cal Newport. I resonate with his ideas. He has never been on social media. He doesn't have any account like that, and he manages very well. He tells everyone to completely disconnect from social media. That may sound kind of extreme to some of you, and you may not want that approach. Caroline Webb, How to Have a Good Day, obviously. I really like that book and recommend her audio with her awesome British accent. Adam Alter with his book on Irresistible. This one, I would say, is a lot more conversational, a lot less research-based. So you might have a child that feels good about it. And actually, funny side note, I was listening to this book while I was working out, and I almost fell over. I was like swinging this dumbbell, doing this shoulder exercise, and all of a sudden they quoted my friend that had, anyway, it was so amazing. My friend didn't even know he'd ended up in the book, even though he, because the author had emailed him like 5 years before. It was really funny. Anyway, his name is Ryan Petrie. But Adam Alter has reviewed, I used to live in Seattle, and our friend did as well, and lived by one of the addiction recovery centers. And Adam Alter focuses a lot in his book on addiction. We didn't cover addiction here, but if that's a more serious problem, I feel like Adam Alter does a good job on helping you understand when it needs treatment and when you might need to have more. I mentioned Peter Shankman. I just finished his Faster Than Normal book. Now, Peter Shankman is super fun to listen to. He is an engaging, you know, worldwide leadership trainer and deals with his ADD in such amazing ways. He gets up at 3:30 every morning to exercise and really likes living that way. He has learned to manage his symptoms and deal with his distractions in a way that help him harness the best about his personality. I find it completely inspiring to read his book. Now, you think about Peter Shankman. He's on Facebook. He's on Twitter. He does a ton of things on social media. He loves hearing from people that have read his book. He and Cal Newport actually have a lot in common about how they handle their social media. And Peter Shankman, I mean, of all the people, you think, okay, go ahead, let's follow your advice. He completely shuts off his phone, everything, 8 p.m. He's like, I always give myself 1 hour, no screens before bedtime, always. And this is a guy who, you know, struggles with impulsivity and being able to manage himself. He's like, there's no way. I know how I feel when I receive temptation, and I don't want that. And also, Peter Shankman has a lot of limits with himself about when he will go online and when he will engage with it in a way that's really healthy. So if Cal Newport sounds a little too extreme, you might find you resonate with Peter Shankman. Ed Hallowell wrote Crazy Busy and other books. Ed Hallowell also has ADD. Peter Shankman, actually, he has this awesome podcast and blog with a lot of ideas about distraction. His whole focus is on distraction and dealing with those ideas. So you have Ed Hallowell with Crazy Busy, which is pretty good, but it's probably not my favorite on the list, but I do think he has good ideas. Neil Postman, Amusing Ourselves to Death. I feel like this has influenced me a lot in my family choices. And full disclosure, we have no TV and never had in our marriage. We have never had a gaming console. None of my children, not even my 16-year-old, have phones. I actually don't even have a data plan myself. We are really highly restricted with the technology that we use, and my husband's a computer programmer. I feel really happy with the balance we have. My children are learning to program, but in a way that's very appropriate and what I feel really good about. So what will feel good to you is different than what feels good to me, but I can tell you from personal experience, I like how I feel when I'm not distracted, and I like how I feel when my kids aren't distracted. Alex Soojung Kim Peng's Distraction Addiction is excellent. He also wrote a follow-up book called Rest, where he specifically talks about the need that we have for rest and the need we have for that deliberate downtime. He's also a lot more conversational and less intimidating, maybe, with the research that he picks up. So if that's the style that you're looking for, I recommend that book. Okay, so let's just review what we've talked about today. We're talking about flow, and that's our ultimate goal for where we want to go in our homeschool experiences. We want to experience flow during the day, and we want our kids to experience flow. And you're going to go back and listen to Ariel Rodriguez talk about flow, or you're going to get the Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi book on flow, where we have no attention left over to think about anything irrelevant, where we are going for that thing that arouses terrifying longing, and we're excited to study, and that is our first step in decreasing the distraction in our home. We are going to choose subjects and ideas that we really care about. Our second step is to start single tasking. Start shortening your task list so that you are doing one thing at a time, and you are slowing down the interactions you have with your kids. You're going to start reflecting at the end of every day and choosing more deliberate downtime, where you think about the things you've discovered, the things you've achieved, the things you're thankful for, and what you've experienced. And you're going to start putting your phone farther away. Turn off all notifications, or maybe allow only texts from 2 or 3 certain people that may need to get in touch with you for an emergency. You're going to start going online in bursts and creating a new change with yourself where you can commit to yourself about how frequently and how often you want to be online and not wasting time in that way. And then, yes, most of all, saying yes to that subject that arouses terrifying longing. Thank you.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.